The top topics, the headiest headlines, the debatiest debate. This is Sportsnet Magazine Live on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Don't push me, cause I'm close to the edge. I'm trying not to lose my head.
It's like a jungle sometimes. Hey, happy weekend. It's Sportsnet Magazine Live on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Ben Ennis, Gare Joyce, and John Greg Lotz to get to. As we'll talk about the Blue Jays finally finding their form, although, I mean, it's just spurts that the offense has kind of found itself and reverted to 2015 form. Also, a couple of series in the Western Conference in the Stanley Cup playoffs tied up at two in the Washington Capitals on the verge of headed home early yet again. Plus, top two picks in the upcoming NHL draft doing battle in the World Hockey Championships. But, gents, we start with the Toronto Raptors, who get set to play Game 3 in Miami against the Heat. Split the first two games at home. Both go to overtime. Both rather dramatic. I mean, how do you go to overtime and not be dramatic, I suppose? I guess the overtime in Game 1 wasn't nearly as dramatic. It seemed like the Heat pulled away almost instantaneously. Okay, I'll take the positive side of things, because it's amazing that we're talking about a team in the second round tied up at twos with the Miami Heat, and there are a lot of negatives to talk about when you're talking about the Raptors. How about this? Try this on for size. The Raptors do find themselves in the second round, tied at ones with the Miami Heat, and their two best players have not looked really anything like they looked at most times during the regular season. So maybe, Gare, there's room for optimism there. If those guys figure it out, maybe they'll steamroll the Miami Heat. How about that?
I don't see that happening. I think ugly begets more ugly, right? And it's been, as you know, we're sitting here in the second round going to Miami, tied at one. There's nine games, and I feel like the Raptors have won five quarters in nine games. You know, I expect DeRozan will go 24 for 30 today. In game three. He'll get 30 touches and shoot 24 times. That's what I'm fully expecting.
It's a testament to their depth, right? I mean, that's what we've seen is, you know, the bench guys coming in and doing what they do best and basically making up for the more or less horrendous offensive play of the two big players. I mean, I would say Kyle Lowry is doing more for the team than DeRozan is. I mean, he's dishing the ball a little bit more. I think he's averaging 7.2 assists a game in the playoffs.
And, well, DeRozan wouldn't pass you the salt at a team meal, right?
Well, and that's the thing is it's one thing to take a lot of shots. It's another thing to take a lot of bad shots. And I think, you know, this cold streak is in his head and he's forcing shots when he shouldn't be. You've got to move the ball more. You got to make space for the other guys on the floor and have faith in them to do what they're paid to do. Whether it's Damari Carroll, who seems to be getting better and better, or JV, who's been a beast down low and has been, you know, the matchups for him, he's just been crushing everybody. I don't understand why you're not getting him the ball more on set plays.
The only one who can stop JV at this point is probably DeRozan freezing him out. That's about it. And Lowry at least looks for an entry pass, but
occasionally, but not. Yeah, it seems like every time there's a moment where you can really start to build momentum or maybe stop a run against you, and you think, well, you know, wouldn't a nice bucket down low, an easy look for your 7-foot center, wouldn't that be nice? It never happens. And it's one thing, listen, that it shouldn't be shocking to anybody that's watched this Raptors team really for the last 3 years, all 82 games. This is kind of the way it goes. And this year you lived with it because those two all-stars were just that, all-stars, and they deserved to be in the all-star game. And DeMar DeRozan had a career year and Kyle Lowry had a career year shooting the three. It's interesting now with the bright lights and the attention of North American basketball media that more people are asking these questions. And I wonder if it's going to be tougher for Kyle Lowry and DeMar DeRozan to continue to do what they've done during the regular season, because now it's not just like people in Toronto saying, boy, you got to get Jonas Valanciunas the ball. I can't believe they're not getting Jonas Valanciunas the ball. You see Charles Barkley and the TNT crew. I mean, this it's obvious. It seems obvious, at least. And then it leads me to my next question, and it's one that I've asked multiple times over the last 3 years, and I guess I don't know the answer. Like, isn't this coaching at some point? Can't you tell your players where the ball has to go on offense?
Casey just seems sort of resigned at this point. I mean, you know, it's like, I've tried coaching these guys, and really we are what we are at this point. I mean, that's really sort of what he was sending out after game two.
Yeah, I mean, that's the question that I would have as well. It's one thing, you know, what you say at the podium about your guys. It's another thing what you're saying at practice or in the room with your guys. And I don't disagree, Ben, that I think it's time to stop relying on your, if you're DeMar or Kyle Lowry, it's time to stop relying on yourself as much as you have been and see what happens when you work the ball around. You look for more open guys, allow them to jack up those shots because you're simply not hitting them, right? I mean, that's the thing. It's like, it's not for lack of trying. It's not because you don't have a good history of being shooters. It's just you're cold right now. It's been 9 games of horrendous shooting for the most part. And if we're going to move on, you got to try something different.
I'm willing to cut Lowry some slack just because you know he's banged up.
Like
when
sure.
when he hit the deck in game seven against Indy, I didn't think he was getting up.
Yeah.
Right. It was like bring out the stretcher.
But even then, Gary, you know, you got to be more self-aware. If you're banged up, whether it's your elbow or whatever it is, and, you know, all these guys at this time of the year are banged up, right? They're covered in bruises and everything.
Yeah, DeRozan's got a thumb issue.
Yeah, and I mean, you have to play with what you've got. And if you can't shoot, stop shooting as much as you are until you get the wide open look. Stop forcing everything. And maybe, you know, play a little bit more half court. Move the ball around. Like I keep saying, like, look for some other guys and see what they can do.
Well, it's amazing that we're still talking about move the ball around, get better looks, stop shooting contested shots.
I mean, where is John Wooden when we need him?
right. It seems like that's the constant refrain with this team.
It has been all season. And now it's coming back to bite them when it matters most, right? Because, yes, they are in the second round of the playoffs. But, you know, I don't have the faith in them to be able to continue past the second round if they continue to play ugly basketball.
Either team you figure is going to be like a bug getting squashed by the Cleveland Cavaliers.
Yeah.
I mean, to a certain degree, you're playing with house money now. You're definitely, I mean, you've got all of the house money.
Are you? Maybe we can break that down a bit. Losing in the second round playing ugly basketball, is that a win for this franchise when you're the second seed going in?
It's a loss for the league. You know, everyone's talking about the terrible start times of games that the Raptors are in, that they're not a draw on, you know, U.S. network TV. But the thing is, it's such an ugly game. I'm sure that the NBA would love if the games were on against infomercials at 2 o'clock in the morning.
They could play them on like a barge out in the Atlantic Ocean somewhere.
Right. Yeah. No, blacked out throughout the continental United States, right? They would be happy with that because it's some kind of ugly.
But Ben, you said they're playing with house money now. So are you saying that this is a successful season because they won a playoff round?
To a degree. There are the demarcation of failure was not getting out of the first round. That was a failure. There's no other way to evaluate the season. If they had lost, even in 7 games, to the Pacers, that was a failure. Now you're dealing with degrees of success, I would think.
Money here is a roll of nickels, right?
Yeah. Like,
it's really not that much.
Right. It's like basically breaking even, which is, I mean, if you go to Vegas and you break even, you are winning because odds are
free
not
drinks.
Your favorite. Yeah.
You got free drinks.
That's right. And if they go 7 games against the Heat, I guess maybe you got a roll of loonies instead of nickels. And then I think if you get to the Eastern Conference Final, because despite the fact that they beat the Cavs more often than not during the regular season, won the season series, I think anybody who's watched the Cavs play, that's watched the other teams in the Eastern Conference play, those teams are not playing the same sport. And you wouldn't be shocked by any degree if they got swept in four games by the Cavaliers. But then you are playing with house money. Then you're going home with a couple of G's in your back pocket, I think.
I mean, I would have said at the beginning or even in the middle of this season that win a playoff round and you've had a good year. But by the end with, what was it, 56 wins and the second seed by a pretty good margin, and, you know, they looked like they were rolling, and they were getting Carroll back for the playoffs. To me, if you don't get out of the second round, it's not a success. It's not an abject failure by any means, but you haven't done what you should have done this season.
Miami's kind of ripe for the picking, too. I mean, as ugly as the Raptors have looked here, the Heat have turned it over. And I know Dwayne Wade still has something left in the tank, for sure. It's been incredible, especially the way he's hit those opportune threes where he was like, you know, he didn't hit one before the playoffs until December was the last three he hit, and then he's been perfect in the postseason from beyond the arc. But and Whiteside is a beast at defending the rim. But this is, let's be frank, without Chris Bosh, this is a very winnable series for the Raptors as well.
It should be.
Yeah, they should win it. I mean, even as bad as DeRozan and Lowry are playing, it's there for the taking. You know, you just need DeRozan just to be a little better. And then I can't see them losing this series.
I think you need, like, Kyle Lowry not to be the worst shooting player in the history of the NBA playoffs over the games that he's played. He's shooting like 30% for the amount of shots he's taken. He's been historically bad.
16 from three for the playoffs.
That's unbelievable. And it's untenable. And it's also, I mean, part of the what's unbelievable is that they are where they are with him doing that. Where he was, I mean, say what you will about DeMar DeRozan being the guy that was looked to create offense. I don't think anyone's going to disagree with the notion that Kyle Lowry was this team's best player 82 games and the guy they could least afford to lose. Like, he was the guy that made this offense go. He hasn't made this offense go.
How's he missing foul shots, right? I mean, you know, when he's knocking down 23 straight in a game, you know, earlier in the year, 2 of 8 and, like, you know, key ones late in the game.
Yeah, DeRozan.
Yeah.
I mean, you got to think that at this point for both those guys, it's in their heads, right? Where,
well, and I think
they
Kyle
don't have
Lowry
any confidence.
Yeah.
They don't have any confidence in themselves. And I mean,
isn't that scary though? When Kyle Lowry's talking about, oh yeah, it's in my head. And I go into the gym at like whatever, midnight, 3 a.m, which, I mean, you talk about effort. I mean, at least he's trying.
There's worse places he could go at 3 a.m, right? Like,
and he says, yeah, it just feels different. You know, I can, they all go down when I'm by myself. Isn't that kind of scary when you talk about guys being clutch performers?
Yeah, I mean, would they all go down if there was one guy in his face? I mean, obviously not, right? But I go back to my point. If you've lost confidence in yourself, then give the ball to somebody else. Let somebody else take some shots. Let's see what happens when Damari Carroll or when Corey Joseph is on the floor. Get him more looks. And, you know, I know it's not his job to shoot, but he's shooting like 56%. These playoffs, like, let's see what happens if he gets more attempts, right? I mean, and again, back to JV, just put it down low and see what happens.
It just seems like this team has trouble adapting, right? Like, we've seen, if there was ever any doubt at how different the NBA playoff game is to the regular season, we're learning that pretty quickly here. And it just seems like what worked during the regular season, we had an inkling it might not work. I don't know if we had quite the understanding of how little it works in the postseason, especially with this team, which means, well, to me, and I know you're still talking about a tie series and going into game three and still the ability to make an Eastern Conference final. I can't stop projecting ahead to the offseason and what this team does when it's all said and done, whether they make an Eastern Conference final, whether they bow out in the second round to the Miami Heat, because there's large, capital L, questions and decisions for Masai Ujiri to make this offseason, most notably with the pending free agency of DeMar DeRozan. There's another two first-round picks. One of them could be a top 10 pick, which has some serious value. There's a lot of other free agents that the Raptors might be interested in. I've never heard the term referendum used so much about a sporting franchise than I have about this Raptors playoff run. This is a referendum. Well, I guess Game 7 against the Pacers was a referendum on this edition of the Raptors. I thought some of the questions would be answered. I don't know if Game 7 has really answered many of them for me.
I demand a recount.
Yeah.
If that's a referendum.
Right. Like, doesn't it feel like we're still part of this process, Garen, evaluating what this team is and whether you can go to war with it again in 2016, 2017?
Boy, if last impressions are the most important impressions, you know, you look at the last impression that DeRozan is leaving prior to his free agency, and boy, you would have to really bite hard on way past performance to think of him as a max player at this point. Like, I don't see it.
There's so much money coming in, though. I mean, somebody's going to give it to him, right? I mean, and if you don't have him on this team, where are you next year? Like, who's scoring 24 points or whatever it is a game for you during the regular season?
Well, I mean, there's just so many pieces. There's so many moving parts. There's so many tradable assets, too, with this team. Like, who knows?
But, like, Biombo's not going to be back.
Right.
If DeMar DeRozan is back, Biombo's not back, right? But no, but I mean, he's
Biombo's
been very important to this team, especially in the second half and into these playoffs, mm-hmm. right? I mean, the energy he brings off the bench and his ability to just be a vacuum cleaner underneath the rim has been amazing.
They've been their best in these playoffs when he's been on the floor. Like, it's not coincidence.
And would anybody have thought that this team would be where it is in these playoffs if you had said your two best players are your two centers?
Mm-hmm.
I would say no, they wouldn't have said that, or they wouldn't have guessed they'd be tied at one all in the second round with anybody. But that's been the case, and they've survived by the skin of their teeth. And, I mean, still next year, you got to have guys who can score. And, I mean, you know, is Dwight Powell is not going to be DeMar DeRozan, right?
Norm Powell, sorry.
So I think you've got to bring him back unless you're planning to go out and really take a run at somebody else or another two guys who you think add up to more.
Well, is it as simple a question as do you bring him back or do you not bring him back? Or is it like, I wish there was a middle ground here where you can, like, you bring Kyle Lowry and DeMar DeRozan back, but the offense works differently. Like, it's smarter. Those are not the only guys that you count on to score.
Well, is it the coach then? Is that what you're saying?
And then how do you do that? Like, maybe you make an Eastern Conference final and then you bow out in four games to the Cavaliers and then you fire the coach. Can you do that? I mean, you can do whatever you want.
Cleveland did worse this year.
Right. But that's, I don't know. I have a tough time drawing parallels to that. That's a team that's got maybe the greatest basketball player of all time and in it to win a championship every single season. I don't know. Like, I don't know what you do. Because especially if the results are there, like if you make an Eastern Conference final, is it difficult to separate the results from the process? Like I know Mark Shapiro's got the term process all drilled into our brains, but right, like there is some logic to it. It's not just where you end up, like there's circumstance. The only thing you can control is the process. Is the process right for this Raptors team? Which is, and again, it's hard to, the way they played and watching them play in this postseason, forget about the larger picture years down the line. It's eventually making an NBA finals and winning a championship. Are you on that right path going down this way?
You know, I really like Casey as a person. I like him as a coach, but you know what? Like,
everybody's a nice guy.
Well, not everyone's a nice
guy. Yeah, that's a good point.
We were talking about Mark Crawford earlier, right? But no, not everyone's a nice guy. He's a nice guy. And yet, I don't know that he's coaching this team right now. You know, he's not getting what he's asking for. You know, I think you have to go find a coach who can get what he's asking for from this team, period.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard for us to sit here and we don't know what's going on behind the scenes, right? We don't know how banged up guys are. We don't know what the message from the coaching staff is and whether it's being received and executed. But I think you're right, Garrett. It just doesn't seem like this team has been able to adapt, as you said as well, Ben, it's just they're doing the same things over and over and over again, and it's not working. And it's beyond me why it continues to go that way.
But Casey's exasperation at this point is just as plain as could be.
Yeah.
I'd love to play poker with him. He just, you know, I think that you have to really reopen coaching. Even if you get to a conference final, just on how this last month has played out.
And you hired David Blatt.
He's available, I guess.
He is.
He's out there.
I don't know. It's so difficult because you're talking about a guy who, I mean, he won 56 games. His team has gotten better every year for the last 3 years. They're into the second round finally.
The roster has gotten better too, right? I mean, let's...
But it's the age-old question, right? Like, who gets credit? Like so then he can do no right by you then.
No, I'm not. I don't mean to say that. That's not what I mean. I just mean the roster around that he's had to work with has gotten markedly better year over year. So you would expect the results to get better. But if they've tuned him out or his message for whatever reason isn't being received or delivered properly, then like any coach, there's a shelf life and maybe it is time to move on. But I'm not here to say that is necessarily the case. I'm just confused as to why the exact same game plan seems to be in place over and over and over again when it's not really working.
And, I mean, you got to figure Dwayne Casey is at least thinking. He must have mentioned it a couple of times that, hey, Jonas Valanciunas is creating efficient offense. Maybe we should look to him more. Like, you figure that statement has been uttered in the locker room for this team. But, I mean, it's one thing to say it. It's another thing to have those words mean something and actually result in a change of play on the court. That being said, who knows? Maybe Kyle Lowry and DeMar DeRozan in game 3 do become the Kyle Lowry and DeMar DeRozan we saw during the regular season, or they give Jonas Valanciunas 25 touches in game 3. Things can change in an instant. When we come back, speaking of changing it in an instant, the narrative has switched for the Toronto Blue Jays. The back over 500. They won 4 straight. The offense looks better. Not quite to the level of 2015. They've scored in double digits once this season. And the pitching continues to be good. Is the worry over in Blue Jays land? We'll discuss coming up next. It's Sportsnet Magazine Live. I'm Ben Annis alongside Gare Joyce and John Gregg. It's the Sportsnet Radio Network.
With a taste of what's inside the current issue of Sportsnet Magazine, here's Arash Madani.
Tuscaloosa, Alabama, population 95,000 strong. But when LSU plays its beloved Crimson Tide, more than 200,000 people descend on this university town for the showdown in college football. But this journey into the teeth of the SEC is far beyond a game. Loyalty, family bloodlines, reputations are at stake. And this matters. Oh boy, does it ever. Sportsnet special road trip issue, I'll tell you about my trip to the heartland of college football, where the folks in the South believe in it as much as church and family.
Jennings stepping back. He looks. He needs 10 yards at least. He loads up. He floats one towards the end zone, pushing and shoving. Knocked away by Alabama. The Crimson Tide wins. The Crimson Tide wins. Alabama pulls one out of the back pocket, and no Bama tailgating problems tonight. Smiles abound. Alabama wins again at Tiger Stadium in Baton Rouge.
That story and more can be found in the latest issue of Sportsnet Magazine. Available on texture by next issue or by downloading the Sportsnet Magazine app for Apple, Android, and Windows tablets and phones. As an unlicensed doctor, we suggest a prescription for one of our shows. Sign up for our free podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Fake doctor's orders. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand.
Sportsnet Magazine Live, Sportsnet Radio Network, Ben Ennis, John Grigg, Gare Joyce. Blue Jays back?
Blue Jays back. Four straight wins. Take 3 of 4 from the Texas Rangers. Take game one of their series against the Dodgers. The offense explodes for 12 runs in the finale of that four-game set against the Rangers. The pitching's been good really all season long, which to me was one of the major question marks surrounding this team. It was not the offense, but of course, as we know in professional sports, best laid plans. So it's been the offense that has been the question mark for the Blue Jays. And I think something most people would agree would come around. It started to a little bit. This team now back over 500. And I guess the negative things we were saying about it or people were thinking about this team largely in the rearview mirror. John, where are we with this Blue Jays team? 16-15. It's such a long season. And like it's going to be real tough for like the Houston Astros or the Minnesota Twins and maybe to a degree the Yankees to come back from their starts. But Blue Jays hanging around 500, that's a fine place to be at this point.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. When the season started, if you had said the Blue Jays were going to rank 24th in average in the majors and 14th in OPS versus 6th in ERA and 11th in WHIP, like you would have thought those numbers were reversed, right?
Right.
The fact that the starting pitching specifically has performed well above average to date has kept them afloat. And, you know, they're relying on the long ball to generate most of their runs. And yeah, at 16-15, I think the sky is not falling any longer. Nobody is, you know, is screaming from the rafters about disaster. And I can't imagine that they are going to continue to hit this way, whether it's Tulowitzki or Russell Martin. I can't see them, you know, hitting below 200 for much longer. And I just feel like the offense is going to come alive and maybe it won't be the juggernaut that it was last year. Maybe there was some lightning in a bottle there, but it'll be enough, especially if the starting rotation keeps pitching like it is.
Just stay healthy, right? Like, just, you know, that is the one thing. I don't doubt that the offense with the lineup as it's currently composed, I'm convinced that those numbers, like Martin and Tulo and Goins and like all those guys who are hitting a buck and change, like that's going to change. But if any of your core guys is down for any amount of time, then, you know, what they accomplished last year, I don't know I didn't think that was something they could replicate this year or even approach, to me. It was something of a one-off, just the stars lining up. You know, they can be a very good offensive team with the guys that they have, just so long as they have them. If Donaldson, Bautista are down for any amount of time, it's problematic.
There's no doubt that depth is not a strong suit on this team.
Not a lot of people have, like, adequate replacements for their MVP, though, either.
No, I'm not – yeah, but I mean, like – behind the plate, if Russell Martin goes down, like serious issues, right? You know, if Tulowitzki and Martin and others are still hitting at this kind of rate and Bautista tweaks something or Edwin hurts his finger or whatever, it's going to really, really hurt this lineup.
An injury is coming as well. Like
always do.
Were you on Spilka's, like when Martin gets his neck spasm?
Right.
You know, and you've got the throwback there.
Can you imagine? Oh. I mean, it's a major issue behind the plate for sure. And you can't really give Martin the rest that he needs because even though he's not swinging the bat well, I mean, you're coming in with a toothpick after that, right? I mean,
one area that isn't like last season at all. When you think,
yes,
like Navarro is so important, you know, and I mean, just made Martin better.
Yeah, and I mean, Ben will hate this, but he just seemed to be clutch as well. He seemed to come up with big hits at the right moments.
I don't hate that. You can come up with big hits at the right moment. It doesn't mean that that's what you do. That's not a repeatable skill. It may happen even for a full year. Listen, clutch exists. It's just nobody's shown the ability throughout their career to be a clutch hitter.
I've always thought you were clutch.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I didn't
You know,
say
when there's it, that it important line, you come out with it.
Yeah,
you know?
Thank you. I didn't say it doesn't exist in radio. It definitely does. Tulowitzki is the most interesting guy to me. Got the day off in the first game of the Dodgers series. Apparently a scheduled day off. He's back in the lineup against Clayton Kershaw. Actually, a guy he's seen a ton, of course, playing in that division for the majority of his career. We're talking about still not a giant sample size, but yeah, not an insignificant sample size as a Blue Jay. And you do think about, at least I do, maybe I shouldn't speak for you, a guy coming to the Blue Jays, leaving the National League, one, leaving Coors Field, two, and wondering what exactly is going on there. And you'd like to see, like, at least talking about the process again, I'd like to see the process be a little better. A lot of swing and miss. A lot of swing and miss through hittable baseballs. He's not old, you know, early 30s.
Did Colorado know something that the Jays didn't?
I don't know. Did they know Trevor Story was as good as he was also? Like, there's...
No, but they would have a bet, you know, those who own you have a better read of you, you know, than someone on the outside.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I'm not willing to close the door on him, obviously, by any... And you know what? The defense obviously still plays. But I do, and I wonder, maybe our expectations have been... Maybe we expected too much for a guy that used to be the best offensive shortstop in all of baseball. Like, I don't know. Does anybody think he's going to be near those levels ever again?
I mean, he was hitting 300 with an 818 OPS for Colorado last year before the trade. I don't see how you could drop off that much, that significantly. I mean, I know he was hurt last year and everything. I don't see, like, kind of the conspiracy out of Colorado idea. Mm-hmm. I see them getting out from under a longer-term contract.
And eating another one,
but also...
Getting prospects.
Getting some prospects and not having, you know, as much on the books a couple years down the road, right? And, you know, and for me, outside of the salary, which is an issue on a budget team, with that defense, like, I don't care. You know, if he ends up being your ninth hitter and hits 220 or whatever...
But you have a guy who does that for a lot less than Ryan Goins.
Yeah, but, I mean, even Goins, even though he's great with the glove, is he Tulowitzki? I mean, Tulowitzki's like a ballet dancer out there in the field, right? I mean, and Goins doesn't have the, you know, the threat, at least, of a power bat at an average. You know, he is what he is. He's Darwin Barney. They're the same guy, right? Like, they're light-hitting,
Goins
great
is, yes.
gloves.
Yeah.
I'm still trying to get that image of a ballet dancer out in the field. I'm trying to wipe that out of my thoughts.
Well, you know what I mean, right?
Struggle.
Like the way he plays with his footwork and
throwing on the run.
Yeah, I mean I followed you, John. He's fun to watch in the field, and you know there are some better defensive shortstops in the majors, but you know we haven't had this in Toronto since, like, I don't know, Tony Fernandez or something. Mm-hmm. I mean that's. And they're so strong up the middle defensively that, you know, I cut him some slack with the bat. I mean, it's disappointing what he's doing, but he makes up for it in so many other ways. In one other way.
It's not over yet as well. Like,
no,
we're talking about 120.
You're a big ballet fan. That's what it is.
Yeah, I am. I am. I can appreciate the arts.
Yeah.
It's Sportsnet Magazine Live, Sportsnet Radio Network, Ben Annis, Garrett Joyce, John Grigg. So the early season storyline was the bullpen and how bad it was. 0-9 to start the year, which was unbelievable.
It wasn't unbelievable. We knew the bullpen was going to be brutal.
No, we didn't. You
yeah,
did?
We did.
You did?
We all sat in here like the beginning of the
you
season.
Brutal?
Yeah.
You thought it was going to be brutal?
We did. Yeah, that was the whole thing with why there was even a debate about whether you put Sanchez in the starting rotation. They were going to need him in the bullpen.
Oh, I don't think I definitely didn't think it would be brutal. You had a guy in Brett Cecil who was this team's best reliever back in the bullpen. Roberto Osuna, what he did a season ago. You had a guy who was an outstanding reliever in Washington last year in Drew Storen. And save for like a couple of outings after they acquired Jonathan Papelbon, had an outstanding season a year ago. Gavin Floyd was throwing 95. Jesse Sanchez, like, really?
We need to go to the tape because I'm pretty sure I remember sitting in here with you
Not
discussing
me.
This.
It wasn't me. Like, maybe we can talk about
Well, if that's the case, then why was everybody in such a hot debate about Sanchez starting or relieving?
I don't know. Are you talking? I can't speak for other people. To me, it wasn't much of a debate, especially the way he pitched in spring training, and the need that they had still in the rotation. Like I think what you're talking about, John, is maybe a debate between, you know, maybe a guy who can do near the same things that Aaron Sanchez can in the rotation, and then you've got another piece in your bullpen. Like if Gavin Floyd was a serviceable enough starter, then you could have the guy throwing 97 into the bullpen. Like, is it the best use of your assets? I think that question is, you know, it's Sanchez has been just too good to keep him out of the rotation.
And there's the question of whether Osuna could do it all over again or slide back some his second time through the league.
Yeah.
You know, there's that as well. You know, I sort of imagine that Storen would have earned like back in spring training. I thought he was going to come in and earn the closer role.
Well, I think maybe the Blue Jays saw what we're starting to see during the regular season, despite the numbers being okay for Drew Storen in spring training, seeing that, he's throwing 91-ish, not 93, 94, 95 like he did in Washington. The process has been much better for Roberto Osuna. And
you're like Mark Shapiro light with process.
Yeah, just with process. I like the process, okay? So sue me. But yeah, he's been a big-time question mark. The save opportunity against the Dodgers in game one of the series, I mean, he got the job done, didn't allow a run, in fact, but boy, was it ever dicey. The two outings previous to that, he kind of was starting to revert to Drew Storen form. So I like, that's the guy I think I'm most confused about. I think Brett Cecil's going to be Brett Cecil-ish. Like, is he going to run off the, you know, record scoreless streak that he did at the end of last season? Maybe not, Gare. Like,
I would bet against it.
Yeah, I think so. When you're talking about a team scoring 900 runs and Cecil having the historic run that he did at the end of last season, yeah, maybe that's unreasonable to expect, but I think he's going to be a good reliever. Like, Cecil's a guy I look at this year who's been a victim of circumstance to a degree. Now, has he been as good as he could have been?
We're all victims of circumstance.
That's true. But, like, he's had a couple of bleeders get past infielders. He'd had a couple of things go against him that happened throughout the course of 162 games. It just stinks when they all happen, like, in the first 30 games of the regular season. Are we okay with the bullpen? I guess, John, you were never okay with the bullpen.
I mean, the bullpen has underperformed. I mean, there's obviously, right? So as of right now, no, I'm not okay with the bullpen, but I do think it's early, and I do think that there's still time to work things out. And I think
when is it not early?
June? Yeah, I'd say June. I think give it another month. I mean, it's still early. It wasn't early at 50. Was it early at 50 and 51? It proved to be, right? Like 101 games?
It wasn't early. It was left to the last minute, right? I mean,
that's
really
pushing the boundaries of early. Yeah. I'll get that.
But
yeah.
I think you're right, Ben, when you say it looks like Storen is getting some velocity back and figuring things out and looking more like the pitcher that everybody expected him to be when he came over, which is obviously a huge piece. I mean, he in general hasn't performed well this season. So that's been a huge hole. That's your eighth inning, right? And Cecil getting knocked around a little bit and, you know, maybe losing some confidence in himself and is, you know, more of a, as of right now, at least Gibbons has him more of like in a matchup lefty on lefty type role. And that's kind of it for him right now. So
could Kyle Lowry give some confidence
do you see Brett Cecil at midnight out there having a bullpen session?
That's right.
Yeah, I don't. What about first base? Cause people forget about this and they talk about how the big three in the middle of that lineup a year ago were so, so good. And they were. Blue Jays got tremendous production out of their first baseman last year, Chris Colabello and Justin Smokabello, like combining the two, they were real, real good. And John Gibbons was able to use them in a way that neither was exposed. And I know Chris Colabello was the everyday first baseman in the playoffs, so and deservedly so. It earned that. He's gone until the end of July. Justin Smoke is now the everyday first baseman, a guy who's a corner infielder in the American League East with an on-base percentage
hanging out around 300 for his career. Now, it's not that to start the year. He's been good. And in fact, won a game all by his lonesome against the Texas Rangers with a game tying home run in the ninth and then a game winning home run in extra innings. Can the Blue Jays do better there? Are they stuck with Justin Smoke? Will this eventually start to be a concern for this team? Because now he is a guy relied upon in a middle of the order position. He hits fifth for this team that almost scored 900 runs a year ago.
He has an on base of 414. You know, he's getting a chance to play every day, probably for the first time in his storied major league career.
No, I'm sure. Like when he was such not a prize prospect coming up,
he was spotted in Seattle big time. Like he really didn't get a full time look there. You know, and I mean,
you think the jury's still out on Justin Smoke?
Well, you know what? The jury's been out a long time, but the jury has been sequestered for years. But I mean, I think it's not that the jury is still out. I think the case is that he just hasn't had an opportunity to get out there every day, and you know what? He's being put in a position where he can succeed here. You know, I'm pulling for him. I actually like that it's opened up for him.
Yeah, and I think in a perfect world he's not hitting fifth, right? He's hitting like seventh or whatever. You know, it's more about Tulowitzki and Martin. Yeah. When they wake up, then you're not as worried about how he's performing. And you know, I think he's not the greatest defensive first baseman, but he's pretty good, and he's the best option that they have. And
than the other guy was.
Yeah, and again, you're gonna take defense on this team because, you know, obviously the improved defense is really helping the pitching staff in general, if not the bullpen at times, but the starters for sure.
Yeah, you'll take a 414 on base percentage, which he has
right
now.
Yeah.
But we'll see how long that lasts. When we come back, Washington Capitals on the verge of being eliminated to the Pittsburgh Penguins, who were the hottest team down the stretch during the regular season, but the Capitals were the best team start to finish and locked up the President's Trophy seemingly with a month to go in the regular season. What's next for them? We'll discuss. It's Sportsnet Magazine Live. I'm Ben Ennis alongside Garrett Joyce and John Grigg. It's the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Send us all your money. Sign up for our free podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher, and we'll send you a free subscription for Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Absolutely free. Go ahead, lounge around in bed with a good magazine. We'll even read it to you. This is Sportsnet Magazine Live. Live. On Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Hey, it's Sportsnet Magazine Live, Sportsnet Radio Network, Ben Ennis, Garrett Joyce, John Grigg. Stanley Cup playoffs continuing, conference semifinals, and we don't have anybody through yet, but that could change on Saturday with the Penguins and Capitals playing game 5 of their series. The Pens up now 3-1, and it would be a shock to absolutely nobody if they play another overtime game, already a couple in this series, much to the dismay of the Washington Capitals. They were far and away the best team during the regular season. That's why they got that thing called the President's Trophy. Not their first. But the Penguins were the best team in the NHL down the stretch. They were on fire. And that was without Evgeny Malkin. He's back now. We knew this would be a fun series, a close series. That's why it's difficult for me to like come down too hard on the Capitals, but Gare, this is a story we've seen many times with this team that they just can't quite get it done in the postseason despite seemingly having all the pieces. And this year it seemed like everything was breaking their way.
And everyone looks at the one constant in Washington's disappointments, right? And that's number 8, right? I mean, he's been there throughout. They've tried different coaches. They've brought in talent, ship the other guys out. He's the one constant. It's always going to fall on his shoulders. But it's funny. I think, you know, you look back to 2009 and it was Sid versus Ovechkin. And this series doesn't really feel quite like that. You know, there are other pieces on the teams. You know, Ovechkin could be eliminated one goal in the series. Like, that's not really getting it done.
Well, but Crosby has one assist, I believe.
So. Yeah, well, no, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. Like, they were the names above the title in 09. And now they're part of the ensemble.
Yeah, I mean, granted, there is that ridiculous hat trick game where they both traded goals back and forth.
Yeah.
But that was also a media construction, right? That was hype about.
Well, they played up to it.
Oh, no, they did. They did. But I mean, now it's, you're right when you say it's more Washington versus Pittsburgh than it is Ovechkin versus Crosby, because.
Come on down, Matt Cullen.
The narrative surrounding those two players has changed since that time period, right? I mean, the rivalry, I say with air quotes, has dissipated like huge, and it's no longer what everybody, including the league, are promoting. So it's a little bit, unfair is the wrong word, but it's a little bit deceiving to say that nobody's talking about Crosby versus Ovechkin. It's just not everybody is constantly talking about Crosby versus Ovechkin.
I think in the lead up to this, I mean, there was that sense of, you know, we thought that this would be a rivalry that would play out in the playoffs every spring.
Yeah.
And it hasn't, it hasn't been there for a long time.
Yeah.
You know, from what was essentially their career peaks. Right. For a while it looked like it was never going to happen again when Crosby's out with his concussions and woes that way. Like in a lot of ways, Ovechkin versus Crosby was going to be the rivalry of our generation, but it's more like what it might have been.
But if the Capitals don't win it all this year, or at least make a Stanley Cup Finals, like when are they ever going to? I mean, the way they just ran roughshod through the entire National Hockey League all season long with the goaltending they got from Holtby, and then another 50 goal season from Alexander Ovechkin, and stout defense. It seemed like they were a team without holes, playing a team that's had its holes at times, and still they're going to go out in, I don't know, five games here, John?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying that they're going to go out in five, but I mean, if they go out, I feel really bad for Brian McClellan and Barry Trotz and Alex Ovechkin and everybody else, because I think the team did, you know, everything it could to put together a winning roster this season. And for whatever reason, I mean, they're shooting like 5.2% at 5-on-5 against the Pittsburgh Penguins, and Pittsburgh's more like closing in on 10%.
Well,
they can't buy a goal.
Does that have something to do with the guy in goal who has emerged? I mean, people knew of Matt Murray, certainly anybody that's paid attention to younger players and prospects know who Matt Murray is, but he's now arrived on the scene.
Yes. I mean, of course it has something to do with coming up, you know, running into a hot goalie. That's the nature of the Stanley Cup playoffs. I mean, it happens every year where somebody does something amazing and a team that, you know, probably shouldn't get through a round does. I don't know. It's more than that. It seems like they're squeezing the sticks. It seems like they're just not executing the way that they did all season long.
Well, I'm glad that on your list of people that you feel sorry for, you didn't include Ted Leonsis, right? Who actually makes Ted Cruz look like Albert Schweitzer or the Pope or something like that. Like the single most unlikable NHL owner, which is like really high standard. There has to be a case made that you tear the Caps up even after like a sensational season.
Really?
But what do you? Well, I would like to hear your explanation. Like, you can't trade Ovechkin. You're not going to trade Backstrom. You're not going to trade Kuznetsov. You're not going to trade Holtby, Carlson. Like, who? What do you mean by tear it up?
I don't know that Backstrom would be off the list on that.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, pieces move like they do. I don't know where the rot is in that team. I will say they lose to Pittsburgh here. It's not quite like 2010 when they lost to that brutal Habs team in the first round. It's not that bad, but then again, it sort of feels like this Washington team was a much better one than the one in 2010.
Mm-hmm. No doubt. I would say this is the best Caps team.
But that was a President's Trophy winner too.
Yes. Right? No, I know. But, you know.
But they were a flaw. They were like a one-sided team. Or they, from what I recall from 2010, they were a team that scored a bunch but wasn't that organized defensively. This team.
Yeah, they didn't have the depth of forwards. You know, I mean, they scored a lot of goals, but they didn't have like great depth top to bottom. They didn't have a Vezina caliber goaltender. They didn't, I mean, they had Mike Green and, you know, I'd have to think back. I can't remember exactly. Jeff Schultz was on that team, I think. There was a bunch of kind of big plodding defensemen. I don't think they really hold a candle to this team top to bottom.
No, I would say that is true. But, you know, was Ovechkin a better player that year than this year?
I think Ovechkin's a better player overall now, isn't he? Isn't that the consensus out there that he's learned how to play more of a 200-foot game and he's not just a one-trick pony anymore?
I don't know. I think if you're talking at peak of his abilities, his physical abilities, I would think that there's a little wear on him at this point. That, yes, he's a more effective player. Is that him? Is that Trotz? Whatever. You know, but you take a look at the Capitals lineup. Like, is Jason Chimera a guy that you're going to win a Stanley Cup with? That's one of the things that they sort of have to ask at this point. You know, there are upgrades that they can make on the blue line. You know, like they haven't won with Carl Alsner, right? Like they just haven't. You know, Mike Green is out of there. You know, they have to be looking for some type of upgrade on the blue line. I think they really who's your top pair?
Well, yeah, I mean, I guess Carlson and Alsner. You know, Niskanen. I mean, I'm no fan of Brooks Orpik by any means, but I mean, they seem to be.
Yeah.
You know, a guy like Orlov is, you know, he's made his mistakes and he's a young guy who takes chances, but I think there's promise in his game as well.
Yeah. If you're looking at Carlson and Carl Alsner as your second two, you can get away with it, you know?
Yeah.
But I mean, if you take a look, if you take a look at the Hawks or the Kings, how does their blue line compare to where the Caps are? Like, it's not even close.
Yeah.
You could go right through the top teams in the West, and it's like that.
They do return home, though. And, I mean, I'd be rather surprised if it did end in five games, and maybe we will see a Game 7 back in Washington. It's Sportsnet Magazine Live. Ben Ennis, Garrett Joyce, John Grigg. So, the other side of the Eastern Conference playoff brackets has the Lightning now up 3-1 on the Islanders. And I know the Lightning are the defending Eastern Conference champs. It's a different-looking team. Does anybody have any... it seems like whoever's coming out of this Caps-Penguins series is headed to the Cup Final, right? Like, can we agree on that?
I mean, anything is possible.
Thank you for channeling your inner Kevin
Ben,
Garnett.
If we agreed on it, then we'd have no radio show.
That's true. Okay, so disagree.
No, I just think, you know... I haven't watched a lot of Tampa, New York. I don't find it the most exciting of the series that are still playing out. Ugh. But I mean, you know, Tampa got there last year. They've got some decent depth. I'm surprised that they've played as well as they have. without Stamkos, without Strawman. Although they, you know, the matchups have favored them, I would say.
And the goaltender is really good.
And the goaltender is very good. And, but, you know, if we're saying that the Washington Capitals are flawed, right, if they can make it past Pittsburgh, and you know, Pittsburgh is a flawed team for sure. They have a hot goalie right now, and they've got three lines that, you know, theoretically can score because they've split up the three big guys. But their defense is brutal. You know, outside, you know, Olimata and Letang, when those guys are on the ice, it's, you know, there's some puck movers back there. When they're not, there just isn't. You know, Tampa plays an up-tempo game that, you know, can take advantage of mismatches and can score. Like Nikita Kucherov is a very good hockey player right now, and the other guys are playing well as well. And so I wouldn't say it's a cakewalk by any means, and I think Tampa's got the experience that could possibly put them over the hump.
Good disagreeing. Good job.
I was going to say, like, on a purely philosophical plane, none of us are without flaws. Right. So, like, when
speak
you can say
yourself.
That they're flawed, like, we're all flawed.
Yeah. No, I'm just saying, yes. I think that most people would be surprised that Pittsburgh is ahead 3-1 in this series. I think many people would have flipped it, right? Because nobody thought that they could keep up with the Capitals. And, you know, some, again, a hot goalie and some puck luck have turned it into a 3-1 lead for them. So if they go up against Tampa, I think it's, you know, the narrative is similar in that if the goalie doesn't play like this and, you know, they turn it into a back and forth game, that Tampa might be the favorite there.
My flaw is I try too hard. Let's go to the Western Conference. So everything.
When does that start?
Not on Saturday mornings.
Everything's knotted up at twos between the Blues and Stars. Predator Sharks also knotted up at twos. The Blues and Sharks erasing their playoff demons, getting through the first round. Blues first time in 4 years, and the Sharks, of course, knocking off their state rivals in the Los Angeles Kings. The Stars were kind of this interesting team. We were waiting to see what kind of team they would be in the postseason. Would that style work in the playoffs? I guess, like, we have to say, so far so good, Gair.
Well, the one, I'm just going to double back here for a second. Like, you're all against clutch hitting, but then you're talking about exercising demons?
Well, we're talking about different sports.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. Well, don't lead me down that path again.
Well, you know, the West is just so much better to watch, I think. Like, it's much more interesting. I'm pulling for St. Louis. I would just love to see them somehow slide through this.
With Tony X.
Well, Doug Armstrong's a really good guy, and it's like that franchise, they've had really good teams and really bad luck so consistently. Like, he definitely needs a break there. I think San Jose is coming out of that side, though. I do.
And that's the team. If I'm pulling for one team, that's my team.
Yeah.
You know, Joe Thornton and Patrick Marleau they've been through the ringer. We're put through the ringer with all these past playoff disappointments. And there's nothing I'd like to see more than Joe Thornton get to raise a Stanley Cup.
If they do win it all, is there a lesson to be learned for the Washington Capitals that there is light at the end of the tunnel, maybe? I mean, it seems like similar histories between the two teams, great regular season teams, a litany of playoff failures.
Yeah, I guess you could look at it that way. I mean, it's just been interesting in San Jose over the years with, you know, like, you know, let's not forget Patrick Marleau was the captain of that team and had the seat taken off him, and then Joe Thornton had the seat taken off him, and you know, there's been a lot of seeming off-ice controversy where, you know, the GM wants to trade those guys and they won't waive their no-trade clauses, and it's out there in the public, and, you know, they've managed to still put together good to very good regular seasons, and it seems like this year the Stars could be aligning for San Jose a little bit.
The one thing I'd say about San Jose, you know, in its the Sharks' history, is that you always got a sense that they were being beaten by a good team, mm-hmm. you know, but like they had quality losses in the postseason.
Yeah. But being up 3-0 in a playoff series, I don't care who you're playing, like that.
Yes. No, without doubt. But other years, you know, they you never question that they were like in totally invested in a way that with the Caps, you're left scratching your head thinking like they should be doing more. They should be better. You know, I consider playoff frustrations in San Jose to be different than those in Washington.
Isn't that just like the nature of being in the Western Conference too? Like there's very few like non-worthy teams in the playoffs in the Western Conference.
No doubt. That's
and the St. Louis Blues have kind of fell victim to that the previous 3 years they've gone out in the first round, right? Like a couple of losses to the Chicago Blackhawks.
Yeah.
I guess it's a bloodbath in the Western Conference seemingly every year. And
narrow losses to Chicago, mm-hmm. right? Like they were right there. The series was there for the winning, you know? And either St. Louis or San Jose would be pretty satisfactory by me. For a Western Conference representative in the final, like that, there are great storylines there, no doubt. You know, so Doug Wilson. You know, I do think that if Doug Wilson were in the Eastern Time Zone, you know, there'd be a lot more focus on him. So how he's managed to, you know, keep his head above water, you know, for so long.
You know, I don't know how, considering the way some of the off-ice dramas have played out. Over the past few years, right?
He throws gasoline on fires.
Yeah.
You know, and that's not even his nature, right? Like that, I mean, anyone that knows Doug Wilson, he is a conciliatory, you know, peacemaking, good guy, loved by all. And for him to have been so sour on, you know, his core guys who are actually doing it. You know, I don't know. You would think something had to give there at some point, and nothing ever did. Nothing did.
Yeah. And Joe Thornton is just, I mean, he is so good still, right? Like he is, whether it's West Coast thing or whatever, I mean, or because of, you know, controversies that have surrounded him over the past few years. I mean, he's a beast and still one of the top. I don't know.
I remember
five centers in the league, I think.
The first game I ever saw Joe Thornton play, he got 2 goals, 3 assists. He was in a fight and he speared a guy on the bench. Right?
He was sitting on the bench or he was on the bench and
no, it like he, a guy that was sitting on the bench, Joe Thornton skated by him and speared him. Right? Like literally skewered him. Yeah. I mean, you know, what's one up from a Gordie Howe hat trick, right? Like it was unbelievable. He is, and it's funny, you look, Le Cavalier is retiring this year, was the first overall pick the year after Joe, right? And, you know, it's amazing the staying power. And Le Cavalier has been in a fade for 5 years more, mm-hmm. you know, and Thornton is right there.
Thornton was a point per game player this year in the NHL, right? There was only like 5 or 6 of them, and he was one of them.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he had a great season, and that kind of play is continuing through these playoffs right now. So I really hope they get through. And I think whether it's St. Louis or Dallas, I think it's, you know, that's could be the de facto Stanley Cup final, right?
I would say.
Yeah. I mean, we've talked so much about the Sharks and Blues here. You know, it's headed for Stars Predators Western Conference final, right? You just jinxed it right into it.
Well, hey, listen, if the Stars made it through, that wouldn't be the worst thing in the world. It might not be what the National Hockey League would like to see, but you know, to have a team like that plays that style succeed would be good for hockey, I think.
You don't think the NHL wants, I mean, they would prefer St. Louis into the Western Conference final over Dallas? Like Dallas is a much bigger market, is it not?
Yeah.
I mean, they're a team that's won a cup. I guess it would be nice to invigorate a fan base there in St. Louis, although it doesn't seem like they need invigorating.
Yeah,
I mean, pretty vigorated.
I guess none of really the four Western markets are, you know, any executive's dream for the Stanley Cup final. Mm-hmm. I don't know. You know, it's 35 degrees in Dallas today. I don't know how many people are paying attention to what's going on the ice. You know what I mean? So I'm not sure that that's the greatest matchup. I think they'd probably prefer a St. Louis, even though that might not be great for TV numbers as well. I mean, they're between a rock and a hard place.
It's all right. There's still fist bumping in the offices in New York City because the Maple Leafs won the draft lottery, right?
Yes, I would say so.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
Speaking of which, the projected top two picks in the upcoming NHL draft are playing right now in the World Hockey Championships in Austin Matthews and Patrick Laine. And so far, if you thought there was a debate between the two, and some believe that that is the case, you got to put a check in the box of Mr. Laine, who started his tournament off with 3 points, and Matthews 0-for in one game, although Belarus is no
bum.
Canada. We'll discuss those two guys, and we'll have a look around the prospects in the CHL playoffs as well, coming up next. It's Sportsnet Magazine Live. I'm Ben Ennis, alongside Garrett Joyce and John Grigg. It's the Sportsnet Radio Network.
With a taste of what's inside the current issue of Sportsnet Magazine, here's Donovan Bennett.
The best sporting event I've ever been to wasn't in Canada or even North America. It wasn't in the Big Four professional sports, and I wasn't even in the stadium. So saying I attended the sporting event might be a stretch. The best sporting spectacle I've ever witnessed was Liverpool hosting and beating Manchester City on the anniversary of the Hillsborough disaster. And I was in a modest-sized pub called the Albert, directly across the street from Anfield the entire time. In 1989, 96 Liverpool fans were killed and 766 were injured in a human crush when the stands collapsed at Hillsborough Stadium. The sheer volume of fans there to cheer on Liverpool equaled a catastrophe. The names of those who died are memorialized around the stadium. Both manager at the time, Brendan Rodgers, and captain at the time, Steven Gerrard, lost loved ones at Hillsborough. It touches the club at every level. The Liverpool supporters who sung for hours, "You'll Never Walk Alone." It had dual meaning when I heard it. Partially, it was for the supporters to pledge allegiance to the club, but more than that, it is a reminder that the fans that died will never be forgotten. It's why "You'll Never Walk Alone" as part of the team's crest. It literally is part of the club's fabric. When fans sing in unison, it's powerful. When they sang "We're Gonna Win the Title," I believe. It felt more like a spiritual hymn than a fight song. Thanks to my uncle, I'm a Manchester United fan, but the Hillsborough anniversary became the first anniversary of my love affair with Liverpool, a club that never walks alone.
Story and more can be found in the latest issue of Sportsnet Magazine. Available on texture by next issue or by downloading the Sportsnet Magazine app for Apple, Android, and Windows tablets and phones. Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. No medical exam or health questions will be asked. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand.
Sportsnet Magazine Live. I'm Ben Ennis, alongside John Grigg, Garrett Joyce. So the NHL draft right around the corner in Buffalo. Boy, there's going to be a folk or two from the greater Toronto area making the pilgrimage to watch Maple Leafs make the first overall selection, where it's very much expected that they will select Austin Matthews. Although I guess there's some debate. Like, I don't know how heated it is and how legitimate it is, because you see this all the time when there's a consensus number one overall pick that you need to talk about something in the weeks preceding the draft. So you try to create some sort of, you know, I don't know, maybe Patrick Laine is as good as Austin Matthews. Maybe he's better. I don't know how much of that is just talk or if there's some legitimacy to it. And Laine's a good player. I think the Winnipeg Jets are going to be real happy getting him at two. Gare, is there any legitimacy to that claim that it's closer than maybe we've been led to believe between Matthews and Laine?
I've been saying that since World Juniors. I thought Laine was great at the World Juniors. And I think you know, the comparisons that people make to Ovechkin, Malkin, you know, are pretty... pretty useful here. Laine, I think, is a guy that will sell tickets. he will draw he'll be an absolute boon to Winnipeg. The idea that some scouts have Lonnie over Matthews, it's possible. I don't know any, but I know people that think it's close. And I've said, like from the get-go, there's probably a 20% chance that Lonnie will be a better pro than Matthews. But in terms of the Leafs not taking Matthews, I mean, it's crying need that they have, and Matthews fills it. You would have to really have a lot of commitment and big nads to go with Lonnie over Matthews at this point.
Yeah, I mean, I think Austin Matthews would have played in the National Hockey League this year if he was eligible. There were those a year ago at this time saying he might have gone second behind Connor McDavid instead of Jack Eichel. So, I mean, he hasn't gotten any worse. I mean, he went over to Switzerland and dominated that men's league. And as you say, Gare, he's a center. And they haven't had one since Matt Sundin. Mm-hmm. And you don't win in the National Hockey League without a number one center.
But he was minus one against Canada in his first game of the World Hockey Championships.
Yeah, and Laine put up 3 points against Belarus.
Yeah.
So we'll see how it all plays out at the end.
And Laine won the Finnish league by his lonesome, right?
He's great.
Yeah.
Like, I would be happy if I was getting him as well. Yeah. And you're right, Gare, he seems to have more of a personality than Austin Matthews, although,
he sleep talks. That's about the one thing.
Yeah, but I mean, what we've seen of him is basically a 3:30 in the morning interview from Austin Matthews and then from Laine. And, if Laine was more awake it's been said, but Austin Matthews is probably a little bit disappointed that he's not going to get to play for his hometown Arizona Coyotes. Sure.
Oh, he didn't do a very good job at disguising that either. You
said
know,
he had mixed emotions.
Mixed emotions, right? Just what Toronto fans need to hear. That's great.
He'll be fine. Connor McDavid had mixed emotions as well, and he did okay for himself this year. So, I'm not worried about that. I'm not really worried about anything when it comes to that first pick.
You shouldn't be worried about anything. You can't go wrong
either way.
We're all victims of circumstance. That's what I'm taking away from this. And so is Austin Matthews.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, I was just joking when I was talking about the early returns of the World Hockey Championships overseas. But is there anything to be taken from this? Like, is there still serious evaluating between the two players that's taking place right now at the World Hockey Championships?
I can't imagine that the Leafs are going there and looking for flaws in Matthews' games and reasons to take Lonnie. I just don't think that's in the cards. That hand is done. Yeah.
They've already made their decision.
Oh, yeah.
And a guy they also have that's taking part in some pretty high-level hockey as well and doing rather well for himself. Mitch Marner has been unbelievable for the London Knights as he's in the OHL Championship Series against the Niagara Ice Dogs. And we see occasionally guys go berserk scoring in junior and they can't translate that to the National Hockey League. It's not an automatic that if you're a lights out goal scorer in junior in the OHL that you can do it in the NHL.
But Rob Schrempf.
Yeah. Is there reason to believe that this is, I mean, he's not going to do what he's doing in junior. Like, it's not a direct correlation to what he can do in the NHL, but is there reason to believe that those skills are transferable?
There is plenty of reason to believe that they're transferable in the long run. You know, immediately next season, I am pretty doubtful on that count. You know, and in terms of like a scenario for Marner, I wrote about it this week on the website. The best option for him would be to follow a development line like Nylander and Kapanen did this year.
But he can't.
It's the best thing for him is the one thing that's not available to him. You know, now after the Memorial Cup, if the Marlies are still playing, maybe Marner's going to go there if he comes through it unscathed. If he comes through, well, who knows? I mean, I'm presuming London's going to beat Niagara. And they're a heavy favorite on that count. But so if London goes to the Memorial Cup and the Marlies are still playing afterwards, then I would presume he's going to get a look there. And
how does that work? So he can play this year in the AHL, which is not next year?
He can play in the playoffs once his junior season's over, right? I mean, if London were out of the playoffs, he'd be with the Marlies right now. You know, yeah.
There's all kinds of junior guys who are in the AHL playoffs right now.
Yeah. So, Pavel Zacha.
Yeah.
Right? Went straight over. That might, you know, if he did really well in his look with the Marlies, you know, in like a 3-4-5 game sample after the night season plays out, maybe he gets a look all next year with the team, with the Leafs. But I don't understand why they'd want to burn a year on his contract. I don't think the Leafs are going to be a lights out force next year. You know, I mean, it would have been a disaster if Marner had been with the Leafs this year. Or, yeah, in fact, it wouldn't have been great for Nylander to be there this year. You know, I don't think that there's any pressure for the Leafs to get returns on Mitch Marner. And in turn, I don't think they want to put any pressure on Mitch Marner to come in and be a miracle.
For my part, I would say it won't have anything to do with burning the first year of his entry-level contract. I think the Leafs, you know, they have the money to not have to really worry about that. And, you know, they showed this year with Nylander that they don't worry about that kind of stuff, right? I mean, for me, it's more, do you want him back in junior picking up bad habits? I mean, there's no matter how good your junior hockey coach is, and no matter how close you are to that team, or in this, the Maple Leafs case, whether, you know, your GM, your assistant GM is brothers with the coach and part owner of the club. When you can dominate players who aren't up to your caliber and you're allowed to play, you play 2 minutes of every power play and you play 30 minutes a game and you're allowed to freelance and all that kind of stuff, you pick up bad habits. And how much more development can there be for Mitch Marner and Jr.? I don't think much, other than physically, in terms of putting on some weight and bulking up. So for me, I see them keeping him up for, you know, past the 9-game mark, not playing him every game, exposing him to the pro lifestyle, pro practices, all that kind of stuff, and then seeing how it goes from there, and possibly ends up back at the World Juniors and back in junior to finish next year.
Marner's first season in London was Max Domi's last.
Yep.
And if Marner's back in junior next year, it's going to look a lot like Max Domi's last season of junior, in that you have a player who believes he's ready, who actually is probably right that he's ready, but the team isn't ready for him. And the team has made an assessment that the risk of moving a kid in at 19 into the league, the rewards don't justify it. You know, and I think that that's sort of where the Leafs are going to fall. And it's unfortunate. Like I say, the best thing, the best option for Marner's development is the one that was available to Nylander and Kapanen, but not to him.
Yeah, I always think back to the example of Getzlaff and Perry when they were kind of shuttled back and forth between the Ducks and their American League team. It would have been 2006 maybe, or whenever that was. And you know, they got to go down to the American League and more or less dominate, much like a bunch of the Marlies are this year, and then come up and kind of learn the pro system, like the NHL system, and be around Teemu Selänne and other guys like that, right? Like be around the longtime pros. That would be, as you say, the ideal situation. And it's, I don't know how much pressure there is to revisit that rule between the NHL and CHL, but it seems like with more and more first round picks, like high picks especially, you know, top 10 guys being ready, if not right out of the draft, but maybe a year or two earlier than they were in the past, I can't imagine NHL teams aren't getting a little bit frustrated with the idea that their top prospects aren't developing the way that they might like them to.
Yeah, the only ones who are punished in the system are the very best players.
Exactly. Right? And I totally understand why the CHL wants to have Mitch Marner in its league. You know, he's the biggest draw, right? And I get it. But if I'm the Maple Leafs, I'm frustrated for sure.
Yeah. I think a lot of Maple Leaf fans also frustrated. Sportsnet Magazine Live, Sportsnet Radio Network. So a couple of moves around the NHL. The Arizona Coyotes have a new GM. He's 26 years old. John Chyka, 26. Like, that's – I know Theo Epstein was the GM of the Red Sox at 29, I think. And Gord Stellick, very much watching the progression of Mr. Chyka here as he takes over for Gord as the youngest GM in NHL history. I know it's not one guy that's running the show there, but 26, Gear.
Yeah, Brian Burke is probably going to ask him to mow his lawn or something like that. God bless him. You know, I mean, you've got a guy coming in who has no relationships with NHL GMs. And you hate to think that it's just an old boys network or anything like that. But knowing people, you know, having relationships with other possible trading partners, anything like that.
Well, there's a reason the Maple Leafs went out and got Lou Lamoriello, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
For exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, if Shanahan had been GM, you know, he does know people. He knows them from having worked in the NHL offices, right? He's dealt with the GMs across the league, right? You know, I don't know if this is a analytics driven deal entirely. I have no idea what the thinking is on it. You know, but we've seen those hires around in hockey. The one guy, great name, Eric Joyce down in Florida, right? He was a former West Point hockey player, but he had like a crazy analytics background, mostly in the military. So
he should be able to get those guys to shoot better.
I think the most interesting
drones.
Part of it all,
they're going to use drones to up scoring next season. Yeah.
The whole executive setup there. I mean, they've got a part owner who is like director of hockey operations or whatever. They got the coach who is like, you know, VP of hockey ops now or whatever. Like, it's like an NFL setup. It's like Jerry Jones in Dallas or like Bill Belichick in New England, where the guy up behind the bench is going to have more say than, you know, maybe 90% of the coaches in the league in terms of who's being picked up and what the moves are personnel wise. I'll be interested to see if it works, but there's a lot of cooks in that kitchen, right? I mean, it's a unique setup in the NHL.
I just remember when I was 26. I mean, vaguely.
What was that, last year?
Yeah. It wasn't that long ago. I can't imagine being in charge of a professional sports organization, one of 30 jobs available. I mean, it's going to be, I know it's not just him. And like you said, John, you know, it's a different style of organization they've got going on in Arizona, but he will be negotiating multi-million dollar contracts with agents, and he's 26. It looked like they were going to go young there either way in Arizona, because Kyle Dubas was apparently on their radar as well.
Well, that's what I was just going to say. I wonder if that's part of the reason, you know, Dubas came out and said, I'm not ready to be a GM, but maybe he didn't want to be a GM in that setup,
yeah.
Right? Where he might be number three on the pecking order in terms of decision makers.
Yeah. We'll see how it works out. There's definitely some good young talent there in Arizona. The future appears to be bright. And certainly the future appears to be bright for a 26-year-old who just got his first gig as an NHL GM. Stanley Cup playoffs continuing on Sportsnet and Hockey Night in Canada. Should be a whole lot of fun to watch the Washington Capitals try to extend their series against the Pittsburgh Penguins. This has been Sportsnet Magazine Live for John Gregg and Gare Joyce. I'm Ben Ennis. This is the Sportsnet Radio Network.